Welcome to Body Matters Podcast, where we bring to you raw and inspiring content on all things to do with body positivity and eating disorder recovery.
But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as traditional people and traditional owners of this country. We acknowledge with gratitude First Nations communities for their continuing care and connection to the lands or waters with which they have protected for thousands of years. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that First Nations sovereignty was never ceded.
So on this week's episode, it is going to be a little bit different because I am personally going to be sharing my lived experience with disordered eating and also kind of sharing different parts of myself as to why I'm so passionate about eating disorders, disordered eating, and supporting people. So I'm going to start this episode off how I kind of usually would with guests and go through kind of a similar type of story. So please welcome me, myself, and I. So a bit about my background is that I grew up on the northern beaches of Sydney. I have a Bachelor in Social Work Honours degree from the University of New South Wales. And during my studies, I was trained at Royal North Shore Hospital. And then after I completed my degree, I also worked there in that same hospital, which was really special. And during that time, I really valued my time with the patients, and I really loved being able to utilize therapies such as cognitive behavioral therapy and solution focused therapy and narrative therapy. And you know, I was exposed to so many different experiences, and it really helped in creating my understanding of what could happen in the world and people's lives as a new graduate coming into my career. I did find though that really loving the counseling element, that I did want to go back to university to study my master's in counseling and psychotherapy, which is what I'm currently doing now. And a question that I typically ask the guests is what they like to do to stay well. A few things I like to do for self-care, which are really important and really work for me, I would say journaling is one of the best things I kind of do for my emotional health. I find it really opens up what's in my unconscious. I can reflect on things. I like to do it in a typing fashion on a computer app. I love yoga. I definitely love to do yoga as kind of my moving meditation. I like to do it at home, just kind of like that me time. I also really love affirmations. I find listening to affirmations can really put me in a positive mindset and really set me up for the day. So I really like to use that. I also love Pilates and doing reformer Pilates in a class with different instructors. I really just like the social environment, the support, and of course, spending time by the beach in nature with friends and with my sausage dog named Sunday. I thought I would also let you guys know a recent challenge that I've been experiencing and how I am managing to overcome it. Like many guests, challenges are kind of continuous, but you overcome the difficult emotions I find throughout them to help manage better. And one challenge that I am now experiencing going back to uni after working full-time for a year is the ongoing assignments. They do keep coming. I do have 13 this semester. I love what I'm doing, but just making sure that I'm incorporating self-care to make sure that I, you know, sustain the energy to be able to balance work, study, exercise, friendships, all those types of things. I do feel really privileged to be able to work in spaces where I am so passionate about what I'm doing. I've always been so interested in people. and fascinated with supporting them and understanding them. And it's really special, the experiences that I did gain working in healthcare, working with patients. So today I am going to be sharing my experiences, I guess, of, you know, of disordered eating and how I reached out to Body Matters as a student to do one of my 5-month placements with them, which just showed, you know, I was passionate about so many different things and things that were important to me. But before we get to that point, I guess I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about my childhood. So I was raised by a single mother who, when she did divorce my dad, she had to take care of 3 children by herself. So that included one child who was 5, which was me, one child who was 2, and one child who was 4. And she really struggled with doing that. She didn't really receive much financial support or emotional or practical support kind of from my dad. So she had to cook, she had to clean, she had to work, and, you know, the stress of a divorce was a lot for her to kind of handle. She was quite depressed most of the time just because, you know, my dad kind of did make things really difficult for her, and she did actually escape a domestic violence relationship with him where he did continue to kind of hold on to some of those controlling, abusive type behaviors with her, you know, sending her abusive messages every day. And, you know, for a lot of my childhood, she really kind of suffered a lot, and she sacrificed everything for her children, her needs, her time, even eating some of the time, which kind of really impacted us as kids. By the time I was around 12, she really, really progressed in her career. She prioritized that. She received support from my grandparents, who also helped raise us, and they were amazing role models. Like, my grandpa was the principal of a school when he was working. So I'm really grateful to have had them in my life and to kind of model what healthy kind of parents should look like, which was really special to me growing up. But after the age of 12, my mum progressed in her career and she became a CEO. So she became quite successful. And it did take a lot of time to really, you know, heal from all the experiences that had happened. But she did her best in what she could, and she raised 3 amazing children who felt very loved and supported by her in what she was able to give us. However, growing up as a teenager, I found myself kind of drawing to the friendships where we were all a little bit kind of lost, I think. A lot of them kind of experienced some adverse difficulties in their childhood. One of my best friends was raised by a single mom who was a nurse, and she had a lot of time alone. She was an only child, and her mom kind of gave her packeted food for lunches, so very processed food. And I guess my mum kind of bought all that same type of food. She did cook, but we had a lot of like takeaways, and we had a lot of McDonald's maybe twice a week, just because we kind of pressured her, and dealing with the stress of 3 children. Bless her heart, she caved. I think we also had a lot of time alone as well, and what was in the house was probably food, processed food, and really easy to make type food. So it's, you can see how we kind of created that similar kind of connection there. So that friend who did grow up as an only child, she became quite close to me, and we really did learn, you know, the world of eating and being together, you know, spending most of the time. at the beach or at 7-Eleven or getting lollies and chocolate before school. But as we kind of grew into our teenage years, that relationship with food of hers kind of changed. And then I guess all the girls in my group kind of got more of a bit of an understanding around, you know, all the things in the media. I don't think anyone really had the best kind of relationship with food. I mean, as a child, my relationship with food was I did see my dad every second weekend, and his wife, which is my stepmom, up until the age of 12. And their relationship with food was very different to how it was with my mum. So the different kind of versions of parenting and their relationships with food, my stepmom and my dad, she kind of imposed on us as children was, you know, sugar's bad. Everything is very strict. If we're bad, we can't have certain foods. You know, she would say sugar makes us too energetic, and we would go out sometimes with family friends and there'd be lots of kids, and all the kids used to get lollies, and she would say, you know, these kids are bad, they've been too hyper, they can't have, you know, the lollies or whatever is, you know, available to them because they're bad kids. And that kind of set the tone with a kind of slight relationship with food where there was some element of morals being attached to food and punishment for kind of just being kids. I felt because when I went to my mum's house, my mum really valued going to dinners with us and going and getting ice blocks at the beach, and like food was such a part of her way of showing love. So it was kind of like food was used as a punishment, and it was also kind of used with my mum as kind of a good thing as a way to kind of make happy memories and connection and bonding. But back on the friendships that I did have, I did find that a lot of them had disordered kind of relationships with food from the beginning. So that close friend, as we moved into our teen years and adult years, becoming a fresh adult, you know, she didn't eat breakfast. She didn't eat much food at lunch. She didn't eat much food in front of people. And then when we started introducing drinking, she didn't eat before drinking. So, you know, I'd say, oh, let's go and get something to eat before we drink. And she'd be like, oh, I'm not eating. Kind of in that way where you're like, oh, okay, I won't either. And I think as a young adult, I didn't really have the best relationship with alcohol because I was such a lightweight. And if she didn't eat, then I didn't eat and no one else was eating. And we would go to parties where, like, as an adult, there would be, like, no food. I found, like, it was more binge drinking culture. No one really wants to include food. But then when I hit my 20s, it was all about the platters. And, yeah, I just surrounded myself with a lot of people who had better, healthier relationships with food, where all food was kind of allowed. Not to blame that friend or anything, because I didn't really have an understanding of food or what to do, and I was really kind of latching on to the people around me to kind of demonstrate a relationship with food. Because in the house, we just had a lot of processed food. You know, you get it, you have it. There's no rules at my mum's house. Like, it was just whatever. We didn't have that much healthy food available. And as a kid, you know, other people aren't likely to eat and you just kind of go along with them, with the group. So I think I kind of copycatted a lot of like behaviors. And I guess when it came to like my HSC times, that was really the time where I had more of a focus on food. I had so much free time to study. And I think that transitional period of finishing school and leaving all the people you were with, because I really felt like I created such strong supportive bonds with my teachers and my classes, and that was the first real big change of people, leaving people that you really appreciate and you're so happy, and then, you know, life kind of moves on. And then I moved into the university stage, which I also really loved. I just found during that HSC time, I put so much focus on dieting and cutting out all food groups, and then I kind of stopped eating altogether and introduced fasting to the point where I would eat the exact same foods if I ate any food, and I actually became really emaciated to the point where people would comment on it, and they would be concerned. But I also had no real understanding of disordered eating and eating disorders. You know, in the modern media, you think, oh, you can eat an almond a day, and there are people who are that thin. They might be adolescents, but you think, oh, this is okay, this is achievable, other people do this. However, that was not okay. I was definitely underweight for my body type in what I was doing. And it wasn't, surprisingly, it wasn't actually about how I looked. It kind of became about how long can I last without eating, or it was that sense of achievement. But I also didn't deal with a lot of things in my childhood. I felt like I didn't really address any of those things, and that's what was coming up as this form of low self-esteem, I'd say, I had for myself, where I didn't really know how to, you know, the value of loving and taking care of my body, and I had no idea what eating disorders were. I thought, even though I wasn't eating, I still didn't put the two and two together, because I looked at other people and the friends I had around me who also had really negative kind of behaviors, and I assumed that they just weren't eating like me and that that was normal. However, during this time, so this was in 2019, for a whole year, it got really, really bad, and I wasn't eating at all. I was so tired. I was dizzy all the time. My joints were really aching, and all my muscles did start to become really affected. Where I had to go to a chiropractor for a year because my glute muscles had become so weak because I never did any exercise. I just didn't eat anything. I had no energy to walk, and it was just getting to a breaking point. So the breaking turning point for me was that I went to Warringah Mall. If you live on the Northern Beaches, you know that that's a shopping centre near Manly. And I went there, you know, and walking around all day. And I just became so tired in Warringah Mall that I couldn't walk to get out. I just felt so exhausted, and I felt like I just didn't know what to do. I had no idea what was going on. I just was so tired, and I got lost, and I couldn't find my way out, and I had to sit down. And then I took myself to the GP. And of course, as I went into the GP, I mean, I didn't tell him that I wasn't eating, so how is he going to know about that? However, I kind of explained the experience, what I was experiencing, and he said that it was anxiety, which there's a lot of different components in that, but it wasn't very helpful. And then I actually started educating myself to find out what was really going on. So I found someone on YouTube. I found Mia Finlay. I actually was so lucky to have her on the podcast as one of my first guests, which I found was really special. But I really listened to her story and her understanding of what was going on, and it really started to piece together everything that had been happening for me. And then I also went and saw a psychotherapist. So a psychotherapist was kind of everything that I needed. She helped me kind of sort through so many things in my childhood, so many things about my self-esteem. She didn't particularly go into anything around eating disorders, but for me, what really worked for me was exploring everything underneath, educating myself, and the symptoms kind of alleviated themselves, and I started focusing on recovery. So that was when I started introducing all the food groups, because I had only been eating three foods, pretty much, if anything. So I was afraid of food. I had to introduce each food again. My body, yeah, it's a really strange concept, but it was a step-by-step process. Took a really long time to be able to incorporate every single food into my life, which is what I'm so privileged to be able to do now, when I really worked on my self-esteem and understanding my childhood. I did a lot of inner child work, I think, with my psychotherapist. That was really important, to view the child that I was as, you know, not having received the love and support that I should have from my dad as a child, and really being able to understand that I deserve to be nourished and taken care of, and that I should look after myself as my priority, even though that maybe wasn't demonstrated through my childhood with my dad and my mum's kind of inability to always be there, having to juggle so many different things in my early childhood. I also, throughout my studies, you know, started working in hospitals. And for me to show up to people in crisis with all these complex needs, I really needed to take care of myself. So no more not eating and then maybe drinking. It really just started to become about my passion and being able to support people and my career, and really throwing myself into this world of showing up to support other people. I think shifting that role as someone who, I would say, I did like to play the victim. I felt as a child that in some circumstances, and how it kind of started off, that I was kind of the victim, and I wanted people to know that I needed help and that I wasn't okay. And I talked a little bit about how my body wasn't actually the focus when it came to disordered eating, that I actually never really compared myself or my body to other people, because it wasn't about how I looked. It was kind of a coping mechanism. And I knew I didn't look good. It, like, for me, I knew that I looked unwell. It wasn't something that I was proud of. It was kind of showing off that I'm a victim. However, I kind of came into the mentality, which really helped me, but it may not resonate with everyone, where if you play the victim, then you become the victim. And I really wanted to empower myself and empower others. And my experiences were definitely valid. And there were a lot of things that, where you are a victim in a lot of circumstances, but what can you do then, once you've, you know, been validated and supported, to really kind of move forward? So then I did a lot of that throughout my career. And I'd say by my 21st birthday, I really reduced the drinking, and my relationship with food was so much more healthier and happier, and I started to become a real kind of foodie, where I love just going out and reviewing foods and sharing those moments with people, and those moments started to become so special to me. You know, I think I've talked about it before, like late night drives to get McFlurries, or like making birthday cakes, or like going to the movies and having popcorn. And I really introduced all these things that for so many years, because I'm 24 now, for so many years, like I think I went through a whole year never eating any of those types of foods. And my body can actually eat a lot of a variety of any food and still be relatively healthy. Like, I didn't realize how much my body actually needed compared to what I was kind of giving it. And I think getting the opportunity and being offered to do the podcast, it's where I just learned so much more. My passion really kind of came alive in supporting people experiencing disordered eating, and the range of people that do experience those experiences. And as an adult, you know, I'm still exposed to people with diet culture type thoughts and beliefs. I feel like I've just done so much work to get where I am today. And I'm just so educated now on eating disorders, where I'm just so confident within myself, and I've really overcome the self-esteem issues, the self-worth issues, not meeting my needs. Like, I feel like I can really relate to a lot of people and a lot of different experiences that can happen. And I also never really talked about my mum's relationship with food back when I was kind of introducing her. I talked about it briefly, how she would choose to feed her kids, overfeeding herself. And she's actually a very, very small lady, and at her age of 56, she does still talk about weight loss and diet culture and losing weight. But working in a hospital, I really kind of educate her on, you know, the importance of muscle when you're aging, and that, you know, most presentations to hospital and difficulties there are a result of, you know, that loss of muscle and falls and not being able to fight illnesses and not having enough nutrients in your body, and it's a big issue within the healthcare space. And, you know, she started doing Pilates, and when she's with me, she does eat all different types of foods. So I remember there was this one experience where I had my boyfriend and all his friends over at one of my mum's properties in Terrigal. And so we were like making bacon and eggs for breakfast, and my mum comes down and she said, "No, I don't really want any breakfast. Oh, you know, like, I don't really eat that much. I only eat like one piece of toast a day, and I've been reading online that you only need to really eat like one meal a day, like a really small meal. You know, I find it really works for me." And I actually, in that moment, just said to her, I was like, "Oh no, we don't want to talk about diet culture. We're not doing that. We aren't like that. We're eating normally, mum." And the more I kind of do these examples, she actually kind of does change. And what I know about my mum is, even though she says these comments and she, you know, jumps into diet culture talk, she also eats a burger. She still eats sometimes three meals a day, even more. And she eats all these foods and a lot more than you think she does, but the way she talks about it is, you know, "I don't eat that," such as, "Oh, I don't eat bread," and then she eats a piece of Abbo toast. And I think growing up, when I was kind of experiencing disordered eating, it was really hard to kind of latch onto her to validate what was going on for me, because she would say things like, "Oh, you don't need to eat that much," or just those types of comments, where I'll now say, my body needs so much food. I do so much exercise. I'm still quite young. My appetite's quite high. This is just how, this is what my body needs. I don't know about your body, but my body needs a lot of food." So I know she's just, you know, experienced so much diet culture, but I find my education around things and just kind of having that confidence to change conversations, if they're from friends or families or any type of body comments, I really feel like I'm in such a confident space where it kind of just comes natural, it comes lighthearted. And I find people do learn from role modeling and saying those types of things, because the impact that that's going to have on other people, it can really shift the mentality. You know, if one person's positively influenced and the other person is. I remember when I was first recovering, like, it was so scary when a friend said, "Let's go for a drive and get ice cream." And like, it was so special to be able to actually do that and to just start to see the people who include all foods in their lives. And I guess I can always commend my sister. So my sister is 11 months younger than me, but she always had the best relationship with food, to the point where she just never overthought it. She just always ate whatever she wanted, no matter what my mum said, no matter what I was doing at the table. She just would always have a really healthy relationship with food. And now I guess I'm so privileged to be able to have such a great healthy relationship with food, my body, my mental health, and really putting my needs to the forefront. I really do consider them, where in the past and as a young kid, a teenager, I was definitely that people pleaser, super nice, never really stated an opinion, really. And I think just coming into also the social work space, that's very much an advocate space. You're supporting someone and fighting for them in a system. So yeah, I've definitely come a very, very long way.
You know, someone once said to me that, oh, you've gone through so much. You must be a very strong and resilient type of person. And for me, kind of getting to where I am now, it was all thanks to the positive role models that I had in my life. So I'd say my year 11 and 12 teachers, my supervisors when I was studying at Royal North Shore Hospital, and then later in other work roles and positions, I really just felt the support of different people at different points in my life that really, really helped demonstrate a healthy way of being and thinking and caring about yourself. So I guess in this episode, I did just kind of want to share a little bit about myself and why I guess this podcast and my career is so important to me. I would really love to work in the eating disorder space, and I'd really love to work in schools with adolescents and try and get more experience and understanding in that area. And there's just so many different things about so many different people that are important to me that I really just find value in each and every person, no matter what they're kind of dealing with. And my goal is to try and get, you know, such a broad an understanding of what can happen for people, and I love learning. So I thought I would share a little bit today to help kind of get to know me and get to know maybe some of the different topics or things that I may be interested in, which you can kind of see from my background. So thank you to everyone listening, because I know how important education is and lived experience is, and I'm loving everything that I do, and I hope that you guys are also getting something out of it. So thank you.
Well, that's the end of today's episode. Please subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. If you would also like to learn more about Body Matters services, you can check out our website at bodymatters.com.au. Thanks for listening.